Okay, good evening. Welcome everyone to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. My name's Brett and I'm net control for today, January 12th, 2021. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 MHz. This is designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness. We'll talk about COVID-19 and anything else you want to talk about. Maybe we'll talk about flooding. all amateur operators are welcome to participate in COVID-19 discussions during this net, as well as anything else. We'll start by checking in if those stations would like to participate or maybe just listen in on the discussion. When you check in, please identify with your call sign slowly and phonetically, and also your name and location to be recognized by net control. Let's see if anybody on EchoLink would like to check in first for the emergency preparedness net.
This is Kilo Foxtrot 7 Bravo Uniform Victor Walton Woodburn on EchoLink.
Okay, there's Walt, Kilo Foxtrot 7 Bravo Uniform Victor. Yeah, I might talk about a little bit about our CERT organizational things that we're talking about in terms of helping out in emergencies. We're working with Walt on that. Is there anybody else on EchoLink that would like to check in? Okay, let's move on. General check-ins for the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. Come down.
Kilo Bravo 7, Hotel Lima. Good evening, Brett. Harry is in Salem.
Good evening. This is Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
A little bit of pause in action. Oh, that was Richard, Whiskey Zero, Echo Delta Foxtrot. And Richard is our net control for the Tuesday Lunch Bunch net. I was listening in the background there to a lot of his facts about rain today. That was quite interesting. I didn't know where the rainiest place second rainiest place in the Northwest, in the continental United States, is in Oregon, not too far from Salem. Just a little bit west of here, according to Richard and the weather. That is Laurel Mountain, 122 inches a year. That was an interesting fact. Anyway, Art came in there before that. Kilo Kilo 7 Alpha Romeo Tango. We had Harry, Kilo Bravo 7 Hotel Lima. Anybody else? I guess I'll recognize Dan. He was on there. Whiskey Alpha 7 Alpha Bravo Uniform, driving down from the mountain in the rain. Also, I heard Alan was in there. I'll go ahead and give him a courtesy check-in as well. Kilo India 7 Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel. Okay, that looks better now. We have at least seven of us here. Anybody else?
Doctor, this is KJ7, Echo Charlie X-ray, playing sound.
Good evening, there's Blaine, Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray. Welcome to that. Anybody else? Okay, it's a little going tonight on the emergency preparedness set. Well, we can talk about something else besides COVID if you're tired of it. I'm tired of it. we're just kind of waiting. I will just say I think we're doing a little better in Oregon than we were last week, so that's good in general. I'd like to talk a little bit about, I'm not an expert on preparing for the emergency preparedness for the weather, but, you know, we can invite that as a sort of an open forum topic of things that you've done to have a preparedness for severe winter weather, because that is probably our worst, most common disaster, especially for our area in Oregon. A lot of wind and a lot of rain and flash flooding and things that are possible. So that's another topic that we might discuss. You can talk about water purification. You can talk about, tips to, deal with leaking roofs. It's all valid here. But let's see. Does anybody else want to check in before we'll move on to announcements in just a bit? But any other check-ins now for the Emergency Preparedness Net? Okay, well, let's stop here for announcements then. Any announcements for the net come now, please? Okay, well, I'll do some repeater announcements. We've got lots of nets, as you know, and hope that you're taking part in them. We'll start with Mondays, as the Heritage Net is getting very popular. Good topics, good discussions about vintage radios, projects that you might be doing, how tubes work. Talked about some of the old magazine resources last time, Ham Radio Magazine and things. Really good discussions, and I think they're working on. I know that they're working on getting some recordings made of that as well. So that's on Monday nights at 7. Of course, we have our emergency preparedness net on 7 o'clock Tuesdays. Wednesday is the slow scan TV net at 8 o'clock. Thursdays, we talk about mesh networking, and if you're tired of that, we can entertain other ideas, but we are still working on that, 7 o'clock on Thursdays. Friday, actually have been trying to get together and have a kind of a roundtable discussion net on the Fusion system there. And it's actually kind of interesting because we talked to some other people like up in Washington and stuff. So it's a good chance to share information. We learned a little bit about search and rescue operations and using drones. So that was kind of an interesting topic. And to let you know what they told me about their drone stuff up there. I bet Blaine would like that. He's an old helicopter pilot, and apparently they do search and rescue work up there. Sounds really really interesting. Fridays, and then Saturday is our swap net, and don't forget our swap net. We don't have any ham fairs or anything coming up, and there's a lot of items that are available. There's some estate items and some things that need to be, this is the place to get the equipment here on Saturday night at 7. So, anyway, is there any other announcements for the net coming up, please?
KB7HO.
Yes, sir. Harry, go ahead.
I was listening to the news tonight. You were talking earlier about COVID. This is my only COVID thing. Apparently, a couple of hours ago, the governor decided she wasn't going to throw the elderly to the wolves. And starting on the 23rd, the elderly will be available, 65 and older will be available for the vaccine.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that is kind of an important announcement for us. It goes along with a federal announcement that happened today on the same topic, that the federal government announced that they would allow people 65 and over to receive the vaccine, and that I mean, the point is actually to get the vaccine into people's arms as quickly as possible, and we're still, you know, not, we've only used, well, we're doing better in Oregon, but last week when we were talking about this, we'd only used up about 25% of our stock of vaccine, and this week I guess we're going up. I'll talk about vaccines a little bit. We're about 36% used now of our stock, but you know the idea is that we'll, you know, it might be better to get the, you know, we'll talk about that, get the vaccines into people's arms. It is a logistical headache when you don't have a whole system set up and funded and organized in advance, and it's disappointing that it isn't that way, but we're doing better than we were last week. We have been vaccinating more people, and the idea would be that, as I read here, that yes, you know, people age 65 or older and teachers will get vaccinated starting January 23rd, with the caveat, if there's a vaccine available. So I think hopefully there will be. This is KG7GDB, and we have the emergency preparedness set. Are there any other announcements? Okay, let's see. Are there any other check-ins for emergency preparedness net?
Hey, Brett. This is Kilo Juliet 7, November 01, Salem.
Okay, there's Crittenden, Kilo Juliet 7, November Uniform X-ray. But I didn't come through very clear on your transmission, but you're the only one named Crittenden, and I know who you are.
Yeah, I wonder if something's going on with my antenna up there. The winds are really heavy down here by the creek. Yeah, so hopefully I don't overmodulate or sound like garbage. Thanks for the feedback, though. I appreciate it. KJ7NUN.
Yeah, so Crittenden, how about a situation report? How full is that creek right now and that you live by? Are you getting worried at all? Or what have you done to prepare for the possibility of the Mill Creek sort of rising?
Yes, I am worried to say the least. But apparently it's never going to get as bad as it did before, but that's what they say about all things, correct? So where I'm actually sitting right now in my shack, I'm about 12 and a half, 15 feet from the top of the water of the creek. Now, usually when the creek is lower, it's about 15, 20, 25 feet from where I sit, like as the crow flies, I guess you could say. But it's gaining, and it's coming up into the back section of my yard. At the front of my yard, where the driveway is on Chemeketa Street, drains down. And so that drains into the front of the exterior cottage, a.k.a. KJ7NUX Studios. So the front is sandbagged. The back will soon be sandbagged if it keeps creeping up even closer to work. But if it comes up on the back corner by where the shack is, there's really nothing I can do other than just bring my stuff inside. Back to Matt.
Okay, well, that was one of the topics I wanted to talk about today a little bit, was this flooding business. So we've had some pretty bad floods in the past, and people probably have experiences and maybe want to reminisce about that. But that's one of the things that, you know, like, for example, we haven't really talked about, you know, what happens if it's flooding? What do you do? You know, what could you do? I know that sometimes Marion County makes sandbags available. I don't think they bring them to you, so maybe we could talk about that. I actually don't know. I have seen calls for volunteers to help fill sandbags, and they had some sort of sandbagging equipment that they could borrow from the National Guard, I believe, that helps out with that. But, I don't know what our current operation is or whether it's been announced. Does anyone have any information on the sandbagging or whether that is a plan or who comes up with plans for that?
KK7ART.
Art, go ahead, please.
I don't know about Marion County, but I know here in Clackamas County at the county fairgrounds right down the road from us, they have a lot of sand and a lot of sandbags, and you show up and load them up yourself and put them in whatever vehicle you have, and you're free to take as many as you need if you need them. Thankfully, where I'm at, I'm not too worried about it. I'm probably about 15 feet higher than the water came back in 96, so not too worried about it here, but for some people that live near creeks, yeah, it's definitely the water's coming up. KK7ART.
Yeah, Walt, go ahead.
So Marion County put out a message on Facebook today for sandbag locations that are sitting out there, and they were unmanned. So evidently they put the sand there, and I'm not sure if they were providing the bags or not, but I think it's probably bring your own shovel.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I just was looking up on Marion County. I'm not on Facebook, and again, that's nice if you are, but I did go to the Marion County co.marion.or.us website, and you can search sandbagging information, and it says a description of sandbagging is a simple and effective way to prevent or reduce floodwater damage, and it talks about untied sandbags are recommended, and it talks about how to stack them up. It says commercial plastic ones are available, store for a long time, and tells you how to fill a sandbag. It's a two-person operation, so certainly that's and it tells you how to place them and how to tuck the flaps under and get the. Is fold the open end under, form a triangle, flatten it, and place them lengthwise and parallel to the direction of the flow with the open end facing against the water flow. Tuck the flaps under, keep the unfilled portion under the weight of the sack. Stagger them and make a little wall, okay? Anyway, there's a whole thing on here about it. Let's see. Then there's something about ringing boils. Does anybody know what a boil is? Okay, Richard, go ahead. The vaccination part or the sandbagging part? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, well, a boil is part of one of the things that you have to sandbag. I just that's a new term for me, so I was looking at that. Go ahead. Okay, very good. Well, anyway, so it looks like you might want to study up on sandbags if you're like Crittenden and you live on the creek. A boil, by the way, is a condition where the water goes through like an under earth structure, and the water wants to move to a lower location, and it sort of bubbles up out of the ground. It says it is found on the landward side of a levee, and it says that you can see water bubbling or boiling, much like a natural spring, and then they ring it with a double row of sandbags on here, apparently. So it's quite a technical thing. It looks like a little, structure like you might find in a castle or something, or maybe a foxhole, military foxhole that would be a good bullet barrier or something. But yes, it says talks about the number of bags required. There's a lot of bags. Boy, I don't know how you're supposed to do this as a person. But if you're trying to place bags for 100 feet, to get like 1 foot of height, that would be 800 bags. Wow, per 100 feet. So for a 1 foot sandbag height, that's a lot of sandbags. So that would be quite a process there. Anyway, you're supposed to fill the bags one third to one half of their capacity, because that keeps it from getting too heavy and just not permits them to be stacked with a good seal. So apparently it's a quite a little, you know, there's a lot of information on it that doesn't tell you that they're going to help you do it. Anyway, they're supposed to be about 30 pounds. When they're, it says don't use garbage bags, don't use feed sacks. Use bags about 14 to 18 inches wide, 30 to 36 inches deep. And anyway, yeah, try to find out if you need sandbags. It's probably a good idea to put them in like Crittenden says he's doing. You know, the thing is, we are experiencing a lot of rain. This is a Pineapple Express. I don't know if anybody would like to explain what that is. You know, we're having a warm, you know, warm weather with lots of rain. And it has some consequences because we're not having, it's not falling as snow in the mountains. It's falling as rain. And even if there is snow, it's kind of running off the snow and washing it away. So it really creates a lot of, it doesn't go into the ground if there's, you know, frozen ground. That's been a problem in the past, having a frozen ground. You get really bad flooding when it's been cold. And then we have a Pineapple Express. But, yeah, we're getting a lot of rain today, and I don't know that it's going to let up. But,
Okay, 6STX Mobile, and I show it 60 degrees out here. run out in your t-shirt.
Yeah, and wear your shorts, too, just in case you have to walk through the floods. Anyway, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Let's pause here and see if anybody else wants to check in. I got Dan there, Kilo 6, Sierra Tango X-Ray. Anybody else?
WB6SRP.
Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, Allen and Salem, Mobile.
Whiskey 7, Golf November India, Steve in Almsville.
Kilo Juliet 7, Papa Charlie Echo, Corey out in Sheridan.
Okay, there's a pause in the action there. That was Corey, Kilo Juliet 7, Papa Charlie X-Ray. We had Steve in Onsville, Whiskey 7, Golf, November, India. Ben was in there, Whiskey Bravo 6, Sierra Romeo Papa. And Alan, I checked you in earlier, Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel. Because I heard you right before the net started, so got you there already. Well, anyway, we wanted to talk a little bit more about flooding and preparedness. I mean, I have mentioned there is COVID news, and you know the news is that yes, COVID is still happening, but we're down on the rates from last time, which is good. We're low on the hospitalizations are lower than they were. ICU, we're like 409 people hospitalized right now, and you know we have capacity in our ICUs and ventilators, and so that's looking good. The trend is downward. Now, I hope that stays that way, but as I mentioned, it takes a while for people to, the cases come first. 2 weeks later, you might start the hospitalizations two weeks after an event. It's, it's the people who fail to fight off the illness, somewhere between 12 and 14% of the people, according to reports, end up in the hospital, and so there's always that might happen a month, and then after that, then a certain number of those people will actually die, and so we might see, so hospitalization lags the cases by 2 weeks, and the deaths tend to start lagging the hospitalizations by an additional 2 weeks. So what we're seeing nationwide though is an upward trend, and again probably holidays. So far in Oregon, we're going up again from last week in terms of the cases. So that means in 2 weeks after the cases go up, we're going to see some more hospitalization. But again, we went down and we're still doing better than we were. We're also doing much better on our vaccination. I was looking at that. So we're up to again about 36% of our doses have been done, and we have vaccinated. Yesterday was 6,668. We peaked out at 10,735. The claim that we have actually done 107,000 people, approximately 108,000 people so far. And 7,000 people have been, 7,029 have been fully vaccinated in Oregon. That's good. Okay, so anyway, but if you do the math, you'll find out that at that rate, it's still going to take a heck of a long time to get through the number of people that need to be gotten through to make the vaccine be effective. So in the meantime, again, I've mentioned this before, the vaccine, once you're vaccinated, doesn't mean that you can't, you know, stop wearing the mask. It, you need two doses, and again, they only studied the efficacy of the vaccine, and they showed that, yes, it really makes a difference. If you have the vaccine, much like less likely to get, you know, get a severe case of COVID. It's not 100% efficacy, okay, but the next step you look at is called effectiveness, and effectiveness is waiting to see how many people actually get the illness, you know, and it's only about 50% after the first dose, we can plan it out how we like, but it, you know, getting one dose is might save half the people from getting a severe COVID. But we don't know, because they didn't study it, you know, whether or not those people could have a mild case and still be passed on to other people. So again, the mask helps passing on the illness. But it's encouraging. They're trying to do more. They're trying to build the capacity, and I'm hoping that we'll figure it out and get it going. So far, we have not run out of any vaccine yet. We just haven't vaccinated as quickly as we like. I mean, the governor announced last week she wanted 12,000 per day. We haven't gotten 12,000 per day. But even at that rate, to get through the 350,000 people that they thought were in the kind of the first group of all the older people and the healthcare workers, that still take a long, long time at that rate. Okay, so again, there's always COVID news, and there's some, you know, you can still study, you know, some stuff about studies that were in the news that were important. Is that people, I was reading today that the smaller but pretty good study showed that even people that come out of the hospital can remain, they can still have active viral shedding. About a third of the people that are hospitalized still have virus shedding after 21 days. So it's, you know, when you hear, oh, well, if you've had it, you know, you're okay after 2 weeks, that's not the case for people who have been hospitalized. And the theory is that their immune systems were probably compromised in the first place, which is why they ended up in the hospital, and they're not going to get rid of it as quickly as a person who has a mild case of it. So that's just something to keep in mind. So that's kind of the thing on the COVID news. There's some stuff about, yes, it's still out there. There's a lot of COVID. I'm going to go test college athletes. It's like 26% of the college athletes have COVID. They don't, and they actually seem to get it more from the from their living situation and their social environment rather than actually on the, you know, it is a result of their team activities. Other good news thing I heard, and I don't have the study in front of me, so don't ask me to tell, you know, that one, but I did read that one of the good news things was that they found that homeless people, they were really worried initially that homeless people would be very susceptible to COVID and it would be a big outbreak among homeless people. That's not the case. So logically, does that make sense to you, that they actually haven't found that much among homeless people? What do you think, if you heard that, does that make sense to you? Why, even though they don't have, a home and hygienic facilities, what do they have that would make them less susceptible?
KK7ART.
Art, go ahead.
Well, I vote for lots of fresh air, because people that are working outside seem to be doing a lot better than people that are working indoors in warehouse and factory-type environments. But that's my thought on the matter. KK7ART.
Yeah, Yeah, I would agree with you. They claim that, again, but this is further evidence that it's the indoor low airflow environments with lots of people that are the more risky situation. And that's, again, I just want to keep hammering that in, that it's not, so the lifestyle, you know, we thought maybe originally, yeah, it was like, oh, well, you know, you need to wash your hands all the time and you should, you know. But that's not the primary problem. The primary problem is breathing someone else's air who has it. And homeless people tend to, live apart from each other and outdoors. And they don't gather together in large crowds and go indoors. So they're less likely to probably encounter the virus. So that was an interesting one. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. So anyway, I don't want to, belabor the COVID thing. There's news. We are doing what we can, and we're kind of in a holding pattern waiting to try to get people to, we know what the risks are. We would like to get people vaccinated, and we'll just move forward. As far as looking, I like to look at trend lines, and I like to know that, yes, that, the risks are still out there. In some places, they're really bad right now. I mean, we don't hear enough about it. The news cycle is being distracted by other things right now. But, I was reading in Los Angeles, had something like 80 ICU beds for 10 million people that were available right now. They're absolutely full. Their rate is basically about 1 in 10 people have COVID right now. So it's really a huge number in California right now. And so, I think we're somewhat fortunate in Oregon that we, tend to have a lot of, more open space and less crowding. And who knows, maybe it's because all the smart people have been passing the word along about the risks. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Any other comments or questions about COVID? Maybe we can go back to flooding. keep the ball moving here. Yeah, I want to say one more thing about the COVID, which was another good news thing, was it said that we have definitely shown that the rate of other infections, like the flu, as well as diphtheria and a variety of other things that we track, are down a lot, and compared to previous years, really. I will say that our measures of social distancing and masking and hand washing and things are very effective against the common illnesses. So that was good news. I wanted to point that out. Okay, back to the floods. Go ahead, Richard. Okay, very good. Good advice. So a little bit more on floods that's important to talk about. I actually found a good reference website linking from our Marion County website on sandbagging, which is the basic information. The real website that has a lot of technical stuff is the U.S. Army Corps of Engineer website, and I can give that address out. It has not the greatest name here, but it's the November Whiskey instead of our normal prefix. November Whiskey dot Uniform Sierra Alpha Charlie Echo. So that would be USACE, right? Dot Army Alpha Romeo Mike Yankee dot Mil Mike India Lima. So nww.usace.army.mil, and then you can search under missions, there's flood assistance, okay? And it has a whole bunch of stuff on flood assistance and a bunch of technical documents that you can look up. Flood fighting handbook, requesting emergency advanced measures before there's a flood, how to fight floods with sandbags, emergency water assistance, etc. Okay. Now, it does say, again, just like any other emergency, it is a local event. It's managed locally, and, individual and land and business owners, homeowner associations, community governments, etc., do that. The federal people don't help us with it, except technically. We organize ourselves and with technical support. Sometimes there's assistance like this one here is from Walla Walla, and they have talk about Walla Walla having a state assistance program as well. But they give technical advice, technical assistance, material assistance with the sandbags themselves, the supplies, and sometimes they can help out with direct assistance. But there you go. It's not the federal government's job to save us from floods necessarily. So we do have to worry about that on our own. Does anybody else have any experience with sandbagging and dealing with floods, or do you have any ideas or tips for people to help prevent flood damage?
BUV.
Yeah, Walt, go ahead, please.
Well, one thing, it seems really obvious, but a lot of people don't heed to it, is that if the road is covered with water, don't go driving on it. It can cause real havoc on your system, let alone anything else for that matter. It's not a good idea.
Yeah, very good. Now, that's good advice. Again, we've had people in Marion County, well, in Salem, you know, that have died. Be aware that, yeah, there were, you know, the Willamette River, you know, we're used to it sort of tamely snaking along, but, you know, rivers go back and forth. So that's why we have such great, you know, farmland around the area, because historically, floods change the course of the river. They go all over the place, and, you know, and so you might find that there are areas, for example, down over by between Independence and Salem, there's a place called, we call it River Road, good name, right? It often floods, and it's like basically you get the river starts flowing, you know, and cuts across the farm fields and cuts across the road, and then it goes back into the river again. So you get these sort of side channels that develop, and there are some places that, along River Road, the Road to Independence, if you will, from Salem, that actually have gates that they put up, if they get them there in time, to keep people from going there. But that, you know your route. You look for, use your various trip check and other facilities, try to find out if there's any roads that are closed. And, yes, never go through, floodwaters more than just, couple inches deep if it, and it can happen pretty quickly. I was out one day and, it was raining really hard. It looked like in Salem in the Morningside area, and cars were going through this thing, but it was, the water was already a foot deep in a neighborhood just on the crossing by Morningside Elementary School. It looked like it was definitely coming at the bottom of the doors of regular passenger cars. Not a good idea. You can float away, you know. Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. And that has happened to people, and there have been some drownings of people trying to cross and, end up in the Willamette River. Not good. So any other flooding stories or tips always fun to think about here now that it's raining like heck. Okay, so how about one of the things I was trying to think about today, it was kind of interesting, is that, obviously we have to have some kind of, watch your neighborhood thing, whether it's the neighborhood watch program itself, but you know your neighborhood and you know your situation, and you like Crittenden says, he knows how high the water normally comes up, and you need to prepare in advance for floods. And, you know, if you can do something about it, like put this, you know, like Richard says, you can, it's not going to stop the water, but it will slow it. And maybe that, you know, again, you can mitigate it through pumping and efforts like that. But, you know, if you see, I was trying to figure this out today. I have, for example, in my neighborhood along Skyline Road in Salem, a farmer put in a new pond this year, and it was a pretty good-sized pond because they put an orchard in next to it, and I think they're going to, you know, try to impound the water and use that to help with their orchard that's getting going. But I can tell you right now that the pond liner, the plastic pond liner, it was very visible, you know, a month ago. It was just a few, you know, probably a couple feet of water in there. Well, right now the water is actually over the pond liner, and it's up against the road. They've cut a road kind of like a levee. And I don't know about that, you know. I don't know structurally, other than the plastic liner, what's holding back all that water in the pond. And I don't know if there's, honestly, I don't know if I should report that, you know, to somebody or who I would report that to. If you saw an impending, you know, potentially disaster like that, who do you report it to? Anyway, I don't know, but I think that person probably should be sandbagging. I would hope that would be one of the things that we talk about. If you have a levee and the water is at the top of the levee, you know, I think that's one of the things that you're supposed to do is sandbag it so that it doesn't go over the levee. That would be a good idea, at least slow it down. So anyway, that's commonly what's done, but it is requires a, you know, a local effort, you know, and it's not easy. So anyway, this is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. This is the Emergency Preparedness Net. We've been talking about flooding. Other resources, do you know that there's a great Oregon Geology, Department of Geology, called DOGAMI, has a website called HazView. I talked about this maybe before, but HazView has maps of all the natural hazards that have been mapped out for Oregon. And you can put in an address and you can say, hey, is this an area that's subject to flooding or earthquake or soil liquefaction or, you know, other disasters. Landslide, that's another thing I wanted to talk about tonight. How do you know that? Well, something called HazView. That's Hotel Alpha Zulu Victor Uniform. Put in Oregon HazView map. And you can, brings up to, you know, the county, you can put in different layers, and you can say, hey, I wonder if that little, you know, place is going to flood, see if it's in the floodplain. Okay, so I think, you know, again, I do a lot with mapping, you know, as ham radio off guys, and I like looking at maps, and I tend to spend a lot of time when I'm driving around looking at things and observing. And I'm seeing a lot of water. Kaiser's, you know, is really, it's interesting if you look at Kaiser, and it has the topology as if the bank of the river, you know, and there's a place called Claggett Creek, and it's a watershed, and they've tried to keep it natural. There's some, you know, parks and farmland along and things like that. It is basically a wetland, and you can figure if it's a wetland and the elevation of the place is only, you know, like 120 feet above sea level, that, you know, it's basically the same level as the river. And that historically, water is going to move there, you know. So, you know, again, those are places that you pretty much can predict are going to flood. You know, that they're going to be the first places to flood would be the wetland areas. And just be aware of those in your neighborhood. Where is that happening? And, you know, most of the time it's fine, but that means, you know, trying to not, you know, to watch out and not drive through areas that are subject to flooding. So anyway, it's part of being situationally aware, knowing your neighborhood, and organizing with your neighbors. Are there any comments on this? Check-in still, or this is the Emergency Preparedness Net on WA7ABU, and this is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. Any more check-ins, comments about floods? Go ahead. Okay, so I'm not hearing anybody there. So let's talk a little bit more about, you know, this local effort. How do you help each other? And I want to, you know, I was just involved last night with a planning meeting. Let's talk a little bit about CERT. Okay, CERT is the Citizen Corps program that tries to train people, community emergency rescue teams, or that's a good one of the acronym names for it. And you know, heard of CERT. CERT is a training program that you go through. It's sponsored by the Citizens Corps federal program to try to get neighbors organized to deal with local emergencies. And so they, you know, does anybody not know what CERT is? I guess I should make sure we're all on the same page. I think probably you all do. But if anybody does not know what CERT is, there are people here who can tell you.
First off, the acronym is Citizens Emergency Response Team.
There you go. Thank you for the correction. You're right. It is. So it's Citizens Emergency Response Team. It's not community. Okay. So, all right. Has anybody not heard of CERT? Does anybody have any? Walt's very active in CERT in Woodburn and has been part of an organizational effort to get CERT going and organized, and they trained a lot of people. Anybody have any questions about, you know, what CERT is or how you get the training or anything like that? I guess that's the first thing. Okay, don't have that. All right, so let's talk a little bit about how it's organized, because I think that this was a little bit confusing as to how it's organized, okay? Who's in charge of it? You know, what... You know, how do you get involved? Well, you know, you can just take the training. The training usually offers, you'll see classes that are involved. Sometimes communities like Woodburn will get together and they'll try to recruit people and say, we're going to have a bunch of trainings, you know, join CERT, you know, whatever. If I recall, there's no charge, right, Walt, currently to doing CERT training, as far as you know? No charge to the individual taking the training?
That's absolutely correct. There is no charge, and our training program is shut down, but we are using one online, and it also is free. It's out of the University of Utah or something like that, and it's an online program.
Okay, so, again, it's just sort of a general training thing, and part of it is to get you to understand a little bit about organizing yourself, you know, and others, and using some of our techniques that have been developed, the incident command system, you know, some light first aid, some practical knowledge about how to, you know, turn off the gas and operate a fire extinguisher, and locally, we've also emphasized having a little bit of experience with radio. Now, it's not part of the federal program to say, oh, you should get a radio, but oftentimes people in CERT teams are trained, especially in our area, to use the FRS radios. And, you know, that should be part of the effort there as well. So locally, we have... you know, from the radio side of things, you know, Salem CERT has a monthly simplex net, and it's the first Sunday of the month on 147.500, and you can check in. Anybody, you know, can check into that. But it is a simplex net, and so Walt and I and Paul Guthrie, the Marion County Emergency Coordinator for the Aries Oxcom group, other people, City of Salem leaders, are trying to see if we can talk to each other. You know, both can we cooperate with each other in the CERT programs? You know, and it's this is a new thing actually. Walt, would you like to make any comment about sort of what? I wanted to kind of introduce, in the time remaining here, our upcoming exercise and efforts to try to get our CERTs to work together a little more.
Well, so we're working on a program right now. This is with the AUGSCOM, which is part of ARES, and it's just like a joint venture. I got onto AUGSCOM a few months ago, and because I'm very involved with our comm team here at Woodburn, and just trying to develop a program. What we're working on right now is something that'll happen this spring, kind of different from the sets that have been getting done. We're going to incorporate some exercises. They're going to be here in the Woodburn CERT program. Likewise, Salem CERT will be doing some exercises. And then what we'll be doing is we'll be utilizing the RF or the mesh or both to transfer data back and forth between the two parties.
Okay, very good. That's a good summary of it. So just stepping back a little bit, one of the things that you may not understand is that, you know, so you may be a part of CERT or you may not be a part of CERT, but CERT is a training program, and then you get, I don't know, certified. Okay, not really, but you know, you get a little badge, and they're sponsored by somebody, and it might be your city or it might be the county. Marion County has, in the past, gotten you, if you've done the CERT program, they have signed people up as Marion County volunteers and done background checks on you and collected all your information, issued you a badge, and that is, it seems that the most, you know, the groups that are active get sort of the most attention, and they try to support the active groups. But in my experience, I was trained, and we haven't really done much with our CERT since 2010. We still exist as a group. But let me just explain a little bit, you know, at least in our area, maybe people could have other experiences, that CERTs are kind of organized by community, and they might be the county, they might be the city. The City of Salem CERT is actually managed, you know, or supposedly under the jurisdiction of our city manager. Okay, the Woodburn CERT is under the management of Marion County, as well as other community CERT programs, Omsville CERT, Turner CERT, and a separate community called Chinook, and, you know, was all supposed to be Marion County CERT. Kaiser, I think, even went under the county. But without the sort of the organization involved, they were community-based, but they haven't done much to sort of keep us together and keep us occupied and doing exercises. Sort of up to the people who are enrolled in it to, you know, do their own training. And that's one of the things that's been sort of challenging. And I know Walt was trying to, you know, get communications going. And it's a challenge to actually, you know, communicate between Woodburn and Salem. And that's one of the things that he tried to do. And, yeah, it requires a very good radio and a good operating technique to do a simplex contact between Woodburn and Salem that works out. And that's one of the things that, they, that they've been working on. Are there any comments on that? We're almost out of time here.
I do think I'm going to take what you're getting. Certified is going to be the program name for trying to get new people signed up. Get certified.
W7ABU. Hello, Dan. Did you make it down from the hill there? Go ahead.
Yeah, I got the DC to DC converter working just fine. Check to make sure that the circuit would pop the fuse if there were a short. It does. So I have gobs of extra fuses, so I just went ahead and popped it to prove it would be fine. Why would you want to communicate some other way when Woodburn would normally want to get a hold of Salem, and you should be able to do that on 529 by waiting in line with the others who would be trying to get in touch with management in emergency services Salem. And the people dealing with the highway department, it would seem like that would be your main source of communication. and easy to do with an HT in Woodburn. Yep, good point, KG7GDB. Yeah, so Dan says, yeah, why not just use the repeater system? And I, you know, did bring that up, that it is interesting. We can maybe sort of out of time tonight about talking about the, we probably should talk a little bit more about how we would use the repeater system, because, you know, obviously Dan puts a tremendous amount of effort to having a repeater that works. But I will tell you that the common argument is, and it was brought up again last night, is everybody's going to be on the 529 and it's not going to be useful. Chaos, too many people trying to use the one resource. And so they all say they need to train on Simplex because it is, you know, that's how they're going to do it. You know, that you can't depend on it. I don't know that that is a good argument. People can make comments, you know, on this. There are a lot of challenges to doing Simplex in my experience with these. I can't hear their exercises for where I am. And I have a pretty good station and a good location up high on a hill here at 550 feet. And most of the time I can hear things, but I could not hear the net control last Sunday at all. And getting around that by using a relay, there's a person named Vince who lives about higher than me at about 800 feet in South Salem. And he has a, you know, really good station, a lot of power and big antennas and things like that. So he's almost like having a repeater. But, you know, if he's not around, I think, this, you know, the chance of an individual who can relay being around versus the repeater, I'd probably count on the repeater. You know, so it's just another technique. But I, you know, anybody have any comments on that? You better have one whale of a good net control. Let's hope that we train plenty of people how to control traffic. WA7ABU.
Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo.
Hey, there's Mr. Terry, Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo. I assume you're on Echo Link. Got you checked in. Go ahead.
This isn't on your subject, but it is something that I found out about today. KD8TBC in A-Land was mentioning that they had a Simplex contest. We might look at something like that up to practice this kind of stuff. But it was quite successful, and that's the one they had back there. And so by doing that contest, we could see if this is a viable situation, which I think it is, because we have people that could be stationed in high spots and that throughout the counties, and make this Simplex type of situation work. Back to Net from Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo.
ABU.
Yeah, Dan, I think I'm going to let you have the final word, because this is a subject we want to revisit, but I know that Dan can tell you a lot about the repeater system has been built, especially for emergencies, and that is the resource here. So go ahead, Dan.
Okay, I don't know who thought up this new plan, because the plan was try the repeater first. If it don't work, then we start going to a high-powered Simplex. Already, you're kind of shorting things in your plan. Now, the way that it worked, the way the plan worked, was somebody acts as a full-time net control on the repeater, and when they start taking in traffic, they get too much, they start telling you, okay, can you reach so-and-so from their Simplex? If they can't, then okay, please stand by. Station number two, can you reach so-and-so by Simplex? Oh, okay, you can. Please go to 14757. If that doesn't work, go up 20. If that doesn't work, go up 20. And if that doesn't work, come back here and we'll reassign. Now, that was the plan. And you get them off the frequency by assigning them Simplex frequencies. But having pre-designated Simplex frequencies is absolutely mayhem, and that's not going to work. You need a place to go back and register your need and have somebody who has connections with the county actually know where you're going to be of most use. Now, within the LDS system, they have a different need, and they're not necessarily serving Marion County itself. So that's a little different system. But within Marion County, we are not really dealing with health and welfare except as a last resort. So we're dealing more with the bigger topics that we've been taught and trained on, WA7ABU.
BUV.
Yeah, Walt, go ahead, please.
So actually, Dan, in answer to that, part of our exercise will be using the 529. So during a particular time frame, we will be using that. And that is not being ignored by any means, shape, or form. But there's also going to be another part where we will go to Simplex. So we're trying to cover all those avenues, including the mesh and Windlink, et cetera, back to net.
Okay, yeah, good point. So anyway, we've been hammering this out, but we recognize that there are that the Simplex net that they've been having is not going to solve it. You know, for it's not a plan that's going to gather all the different CERT units together and make them more effective. It is a technique that could be practiced. In fact, it's probably just like, you know, Terry's suggestion. If you have any experience with doing Simplex and you know, getting that experience is a good thing. So, you know, there's a, you know, VHF contest coming up here, you know. See if you can hear these people. But realize that, you know, that this is why we've come up with different modes of operation, that, you know, you have to know your location. That's why you'll hear people who go to the tops of hills. Hilltops are good generally for Simplex, okay? Having a good antenna is, you know, something more than an HT is good, you know, for Simplex. But if you think that you're going to contact everybody at your CERT cache, and usually they have these CERT caches around, if you think you're going to show up at the CERT cache and talk to all the other CERT caches on Simplex without some preparation and good relays and things like that, it's not going to happen. So we've sort of proven that, yes, these are the limits of the system, and that's part of the exercise is how do we overcome the limits of the system? What other things can we try? Repeaters, Windlink, whatever, you know. What would be the need, you know, beyond just serving your neighborhood? Like, if you did need sandbags, you know, and in particular neighborhood, you know, being able to get that information out when you can't, you know, leave the area, you know, that's where the radio's for. So that's part of it. So anytime we do preparation, you know, we need to have people communicate to other people, let them know what's going on, find out if you can get any help, and report in. And so that's the challenge there. So anyway, with that, we're just about out of time. Any final comments? I'm going to close in it. Okay, well, the time is now 8:06 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. It sounds like Richard's going to make a recording available, and Dan likes to post those on his WA7ABU groups.io page. So if you're not a member of the groups.io page, please join. That's easy to do. Go to WA7ABU.com, and there's a little link at the top. It will take you there. You sign up. It's free, and, you know, you can get announcements for the repeater and share questions and information there. That's a good place if you find, you know, a website or something, or, you know, you want to announce to the group something is happening. So, and we have the recordings of our emergency preparedness center. So anyway, thank you again to Stan for the use of the repeater. See us every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on this 145.29 megahertz frequency. Thanks to all who participated tonight and those who stood by to give us a clear frequency. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, closing the net now 8:07 p.m. Stay dry, stay safe, and we'll see you next time.